strength I don't know how to play. And I don't want to anyway. Need to delete this game and go back to another save. But my hard drive sparked zero charisma, zero luck. I don't have any skills or the XP to fix my
N Letter Media. I am DK.
I am Lewis, and this movie scores five N's. There are five N cast members in that movie. That is the only rating system we use for movies. This is five N's.
Yes. I wanted to say, so yeah, before we...
But it's five out of like 50
oh, way,
people. So five N's.
I mean, it's a pretty big cast, and there are very few...
It's a very 90s ratio.
Yes, very much N's. So. And we'll get into that. I also wanted to say at the outset, while it was on my mind and while we were discussing it, it struck me that there's like an N in the first couple minutes of the film in like the classroom, but he has a girlfriend and the girlfriend is also an N. So we're doing like a somewhat realistic, like the N's pair off with the N's. We're not doing an interracialism, in other words, which. There's so much about this movie that's very refreshing. I also want to say for our audience that isn't, we're talking about Starship Troopers for a lot of reasons. One of the main ones is recent release of Helldivers 2, which I think I also want to talk about this to some extent. I think this is a way to kind of kill two birds with one stone as far as that's concerned. I had never actually seen Starship Troopers all the way through. At once, watching it deliberately as a cinematic experience, I'm obviously familiar with the film and the memes, and have seen a lot of. I mean, it's been on the TV in the background. I just haven't ever sat all the way through it. I think in part, I was reflecting on this. I think it's in part because I'm depending on how you want to cut things, an older. I'm at the cusp between Gen X and millennials. So I was. Somewhat young when it came, when Starship Troopers came out in 1997, I was like too young to see it in theaters. And it wasn't the kind of thing that it was just like versus I think for younger kids, it's like, what are you talking about seeing a movie in a theater, old fucking boomer. And in the meantime, I had just like absorbed so much of, the imagery. And obviously I read the book when I was, like 13 or something. So it wasn't that I had any, no familiarity at all. I just hadn't ever really, just sat down and just watched the whole movie from, opening credits to final credits. And wow, what a great film. I was really, I was really impressed with, we should get, that was the other major reason, which I think was also tied into the Helldivers thing was, this sort of ongoing Twitter spat for maybe the past 2 weeks or so, probably all, as I said, imagine tied at least to some extent to the release of Helldivers, where they have a very similar problem with Helldivers and Starship Troopers, which is too many people enjoying it unironically when there's some amount of ironic intent. And we could get into that and the politics of irony. But before we do, I was wondering what did you want to start out with, or how did you want to begin?
Starship Troopers has affected my life more than any piece of media.
I was thinking about you as I was watching it. I was like, oh, I could totally, I could sort of see Lewis's like ideology being framed by this.
I like the movie, but I like the movie the same way I like Scarface, mm-hmm. in that it is a film where every scene is not perfectly coherent with every other scene. But every scene by itself is like, as like a short film, is like really, really good. Like if you watch a clip of Starship Troopers, it makes total, like any 5 minutes of this movie is perfect, right? There's no wasted scenes.
If anything, I was going to say it's too short. Definitely you can tell it came out before Lord of the Rings, or before Lord of the Rings normalized the idea of a 3 hour, if not, theatrical release or extent. Like it could easily and probably should have been a 3 hour movie. especially the second half of it is way too compressed, which is not to say that it's bad or that it's confusing. It's just I would have liked, and you can kind of tell that, you know, there was more to say and more to do, more to show, but he just didn't have, I mean, it was like a 2-hour runtime. He did not have the space for it.
Yeah. Also, like, this was the, it's hard to tell these days, but, like, if you, the movie is old, right? It's, like, pre-invasion of Iraq, despite it being a,
it's pre-9/11, which is, like, the big, yeah, but sorry, go on.
It's made pre-9/11. It was released, like, a month after, I think. Or 2 months after. 2001, right?
I think it was 97, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, no, yeah, 97, wow. Yeah. Yeah. This movie's old. Forget how old this movie
is. It's fucking old, yeah, that's what I'm saying. In some ways, it's more like an 80s action movie, or it's definitely drawing on, like, 80s action movie tropes. Yeah.
Well, also, the reason I think it's the second half so short is because it's so CGI-intensive. Like, this movie is hyper-expensive. Yeah. This movie looks... Yes. This movie is... I had about this movie to me and all that stuff, but just in terms of, like, if there's a scene in the outpost defense battle, which is, like, a very short battle, but there's a really important scene that... Or part of this scene where the bugs are all CGI. A bug gets shot and falls into a physical bunch of like barrels and like just army crap in the base. And the barrels roll, like physical prop barrels roll out and like a soldier has to like avoid one and dodges one. And they're like, so there's actual like giving a fuck in a way that current CGI products don't give a fuck. Like the CGI interacting with the physical prop, the
practical effects. Yeah, no, I noticed that as well. It was definitely
not all the explosions are fake. So there are some real explosions interspersed with fake explosions. There's a lot of like, this movie is a very weird mix of effort and it's like hyper effort, attention to detail, doing like some innovative stuff for the time. Combined with like the director being very low effort, like you can tell the direct like there or, are certain
yeah.
Whenever anyone fires like a gun, you can see that like the director told them to like. I think they were given direction to fire the guns like poorly. If that makes sense,
well, there's like, no the recoil doesn't exist in this universe or something.
And they don't aim down. There's no like barely. They don't aim down sights. Like there there's certain like weirdness that like. It's clearly almost like intentionally poor.
I got the sense it was like essentially what he was doing was it was a comic book. I got that very much from like the kind of elaborate over the top violent death scenes, which normally I really don't like. I can't watch horror movies. I actually like psychological horror movies, but you know, the horror movies as a genre, I can't stand because it just viscerally revolts me to see just you know like torture porn. But this, like, I think Verhoeven does a similar thing with, actually, I also want to do this same thing with RoboCop, which very similar. I haven't sat down and watched RoboCop.
What?
I know. That's what I'm saying. We gotta do that too. But, I mean, of course,
are you? Jesus.
One of a certain age, and anyway, it's I was like, again,
yes,
way
the
too
peak
young.
Age to watch all of these films.
I'm a zoomer at all this shit. We're gonna rectify this. Well, you grew up with like all this shit on home video and easily accessible over the internet. For me, it was like, there was no way for me to watch it, you know, for until much later in life, and then I was just doing other stuff for a while. Anyway, yeah, like the violence in RoboCop, because obviously it's not like I would say that I've seen it, I just haven't watched it, or vice versa, or however you want to put it. It's a very similar thing where it's just kind of comic book cartoon violence. It's just with human actors and practical effects and some CGI too, I guess. But, it didn't turn my stomach. It was more just like, oh yeah, he's basically just doing a comic book with live actors. And I think that was very much intentional. And I saw the kind of, yes, obviously sort of incorrect weapon stuff, particularly with the rifles, I noticed.
So there's that, but there's also, like, I think it's whenever somebody's on, like, the reason I think it's intentional, like, laziness, or whatever you want to call it, is in the background, everyone's really cares. Like, you'll see guys reloading, like, in the background of scenes, like, battle scenes, you'll see a guy reloading a machine gun. Like, popping the tray, messing with bullets, like, things that are... you don't see in other, in like real war films, you know, like, I feel like everyone, like, I really get the sense that everyone, including, like, the writers and everyone except Verhoeven, like, loved Starship Troopers. And wanted to make a really good thing. And he had this
certainly
vision.
The writer, the script was, I was floored how good the script was. I was expecting that it was, not going to be, it did a great job of being extremely faithful to the source material, but also, you know, meeting the needs of a 2-hour Hollywood movie. And I was particularly taken how, because I don't think it was a line in the original. I mean, I know it's a very famous line in the original where the teacher says, you know, come on, you apes, you want to live forever, like this, you know, famous World War One line attributed to an anonymous sergeant. But when Johnny Rico repeats it at the end, was a great touch that to me was like, okay, I don't think that Heinlein had Rico say that when he, you know, took the mantle of company commander or whatever. So it tells me, like, yes, the writer is, like, you know, doing thematic repetition. He's also identifying, you know, the major themes and really zeroing in on a particular line that has a particular salience for war enjoyers, right?
I like the aspects of it. I think the biggest theme that actually is under some of the Twitter threads guys on the right wing guys on Twitter have kind of made a thing about it, but the movie gets more into like charting this, how this humans and bugs are like similar.
Yes.
Like it's subtle. Although like the media literacy enjoyers who say it's satire. And if I don't ever bring this up, how like the bugs and the humans become more like each other, and are like the first, like the Kathleen Dew assault, the humans behave in a very bug-like manner initially, right, with the big mass, like Soviet style assault, swarming, and they get wrecked, and then they learn, and then the humans are playing more defensively, and then the bug, like everyone's getting like constantly smarter and trying to both sides improve. But they get more, like, I don't know, human-like as they go on, right? Like, the bugs are humanized, and so are the humans as the conflict goes on. But to me, humanization, because that's not an aspect in the book. The book is much more, it's about humans. The book is, like,
right.
The bugs are, like, a tertiary
faceless
thing,
yeah,
almost.
Right.
Yeah.
Not even faceless. I mean, yeah, sort of not even, right.
Yeah. And, but the... But like, so interesting what this book means to me, because I read this book in eighth grade. I had heard about it. I got it at a used bookshop alongside. I had to read John Stakely's Armor, which is very different book.
Oh,
but
yeah, but yeah.
Comparable in that it's clearly inspired.
Yeah.
The three like armor books, you can call them, or like power armor books, are Armor by John Stakely, Starship Troopers, and what's the Vietnam one? The old man's war. Yeah, Old Man's War.
Oh, right. Yeah. And then John Scalzi did like the Young Man's War or whatever, was like sort of sending it up. Yeah.
Yeah, but those three books, I had to read Armor for school, and over the summer, and I had like Googled it, like, is this any good? And it was like in this kind of trilogy of like that era's great sci-fi with Starship Troopers, and Old Man's War, and I was like, oh great, I'll get all three of these. I was at a used bookstore before the fall. This was way before like the fall of the used bookstore, where now it's all like ladies like stroke stuff, so you could still get like cool old sci-fi for like $2. So I bought all three books, and obviously Armor is good. It's just not great, I don't think. And Old Man's War is like really right wing, like the most right wing book I think of these three, actually, if that makes sense. Like in a like a right wing, like a very, it's a very reactionary book.
Well, that's why Scalzi targeted it for you know, libtard inversion.
Yes, and then this book is not a right wing book. It's a third positionist book.
Sure, sorry, go on. I was going to say real quick on that note. It's like the. If anything, the book is more kind of libtarded on race than the movie. Because
So I disagree with this. Okay, but I'm gonna come back to that. I want to finish my personal story. Yeah. So I've read this book in eighth grade, and then every year or other year for the rest of my life until I had already kind of gone to combat and did the thing. I've stopped reading it. I haven't read it in a few years now because I already did the thing.
Yeah, you did the Johnny Depp bit. Yeah.
Yeah, I read this book basically yearly or every other year for most of my the most formative parts of my life.
For the audience, I don't think I can edit this out if it's an issue, but I just want to say you deliberately, it was a deliberate thing of you saw it as a kind of moral responsibility, not so much to fight for Zog, but at this kind of ideal of citizenship.
Yeah.
And
this predated Red Pill stuff, right? It is both part of, but predating however the Red Pill thing works, right? I did not come from the womb fully formed how I currently am. Right. But this was very much a part of that goal. And realizing that things like citizenship aren't for everybody, that's a major Red Pill in and of itself, right? That
absolutely.
Nowhere else on earth teaches that but the book, this book. There's no other book that, is socially acceptable in any way that declares, full-throatedly that citizenship is not for everybody. Not everyone is equal or and deserves to be equal. That's an important thing that I think was part of my development. And, the rest of it, duties to society and the moral right to... what voting is violence and stuff, things like that. These are important things. And Heinlein is a libertarian, actually.
Yes.
But this book, in the way that, as we all kind of, a lot of people in this thing know, libertarianism destroys certain, sacred cows in the current liberal system that allows for more greater truths, even if, people stay on, a libertarian track. The greater truths of, that libertarian might create space to develop these ideas in a more nationalistic, fascistic.
The libertarian way. To national socialist and also pipeline this, is a very, frankly, very real thing. We saw Thomas Massie, who's the only, also Rand Paul, but he's one of two or three genuine ideological libertarians in the U.S. Congress. Just the other day on Twitter was we shouldn't allow. Should we allow? He had a poll. Should we allow dual citizens to serve in Congress? Which is I don't know if he was deliberately doing that as a troll of obviously Israeli dual citizens, but he's it's very clear the way. And we also had Hans Hermann Hoppe the other day coming out against Walter Block and pointing out just how essentially Zionism is incompatible with libertarianism. Okay, that's not the same thing as a positive National Socialist argument or a positive fascist argument. But come on, we're getting, the ideological kind of trajectory here is very clear.
Yeah, for sure. But the other thing is, the movie, no other work, I actually need to read Leon Degrelle's Hitler Democrat, because I think it goes into a similar thing. But a lot of people understand this, but this book really is the only book that ever lays out how fascism is actually democratic. Democratic in the idealistic sense,
In the sense literally, it's the people who have
the
power, the kratos, held by the demos.
The expression of the people's will should be, it is actually expressed via the system more effectively than, my votes and my, whatever. Voting for oligarchs is retarded and gay, and I don't do it. that's one of the other things about, real-life ironies. I joined the military to defend my, right to vote, morally in my own head that I was given when I turned 18.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And now I don't use that right because I understand it to be pointless at a very systemic level. This book covers, I think those are the two big takeaways. And now because you mentioned the race thing that the book is, there is a, you've read the book, right?
Yes. Yes.
So, the book is older than both Armor. It feels like it's written in the 70s because it's with those two books. It's written in the 60s, right?
Late 50s.
Late 50s. It's very old. Yeah. So in the, because I saw people on, there's a bang thread crying about this. And that's actually, so like, oh, well, Johnny Rico is actually a Filipino in the book, right? He speaks Tagalog.
Yes, that's the, like, the big reveal at the end is him and all his friends are
But that is not actually a, that was not a, like, trolled you, Lamau, he's actually brown thing. That was a sci, that's a, like, I understand why you would see that now, because that's how it would work if it was made, written today. But this is a golden age of sci-fi book.
Published, published 1959, by the way, and it was obviously written prior to that. So, although Hyman churned him out pretty quick, but yeah.
Asimov, Clark, golden age, right? Your ABCs. These are like, this in this era of sci-fi, probably because it's like pre-desegregation, honestly. There were, like, every sci-fi, even the Soviet stuff from the same period, has this view of society where via capitalism or technology or communism or whatever ideology, in this case, it's like this kind of, we'll call it, like, military state democracy thing, which you can just call fascism.
In Helldivers, they call it managed democracy, which I'm like, kind of like, I could live with that.
That's funny, because that's what they call it. America now, like, I don't in know, Germany,
they,
like,
the, oh, do they call, is that I, what
they call, they call, yes, that they call it militant democracy or managed democracy are the terms for, like,
interesting,
the democracy, like, when the state takes actions to defend its state ideology of democracy, like, Karl Popperism gets called both of those things. Like, actually, no, we're not actually, you can't have another ideology that means that, actually, you know, which I think might be a, Helldivers is pretty smart. So, because they call it super democracy too, right? That's like a as a.
They call it super Earth. I'd have to double check if they call it super democracy, but they talk about spreading managed democracy throughout the galaxy. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, but Helldivers is being more on the nose. Like,
oh yeah,
whatever.
Yeah,
you have. Well, to. But anyway,
I want to talk about Helldivers sci-fi. A little bit, yeah, later.
These ideologies and technology and progress, and there's a touch of eugenics in this still. Eugenics was never, this is the Holocaust wasn't till 1968.
Oh, more like the 70s. I mean, really, the Holocaust was invented in after the Vietnam War. Is it a way to justify, like, we're actually the good guys because look at what the Germans did.
Yes. So the Holocaust didn't exist at this time, right? And so eugenics was still like, it was not as hot as it had been, but it was still there. And the theory was, along with space flight and your genetic engineering, which is like, this is where also where genetic engineering became a thing. Like, people were studying genetics to get smart. It wasn't eugenics and like breeding, but the idea of like gene editing to be big IQs was like very much around. Like, if you ever read the rest of, 2001, like that whole series.
It gets aggressive. Sequels, and yeah, it's very
gene editing, mm-hmm. like turning yourself via gene editing into
Star Child into, and all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yes. Or like lizards.
I wanted to say
shit.
On that note,
but
you
read, everyone sorry, go on, under this home. Paradigm is white. Under the paradigm of in the future, in this thing, everyone was white. The idea was like, oh, in the future, we're all white. Look at this.
You mean like Star Utopia. Trek, everyone is white? Or like literally they're speaking Tagalog, but they're. Literally, genetically, look like they were born in Europe.
I don't think it matters, but I do think it, like, I think everyone is, like, pretty much, like, the whitest aspects of, like, so, like, if you imagine you're very pale, pale, blue-eyed Filipinos who speak Tagalog, like, that is the aspect of the culture that was pushed for, you know, like,
sure.
You have your most palest red-haired Persians are your Iranians, you know, like, the sure. best examples of these cultures. Yeah.
Well, so on this note, because this did strike me in the movie, and then it reminded me of something you were talking earlier as far as the movie script drawing out the parallels between the human society and bug society. Reproduction is a huge issue in the film. I don't remember it.
No, it's not. This is actually like I had this
all right.
big
okay.
point.
All right.
This shit is fucking retarded. This is when I say this movie is not like things that like my major knocks. This movie is better than a series of shorts because it's not actually coherent.
Well, it's not a theme. Okay, it's not what I mean.
No,
is,
no, it's a deliberate plot hole. Right. No, it's not. It's a fuck up.
Yes, there's because this, human, the whole thing is like the bugs are out reproducing us. Yes, yeah. Sorry, go on. I think we're on the same page, but maybe looking at it. Like
there's a line in the movie that you have to be a citizen to have kids. Right?
Yes, it's very. Yes. That's the one. Well, they're going around asking. One of the characters is going around asking, "So why'd you join up?" And one of the female soldiers says, "So that I could have kids. Or it's easier to get a license to have kids if you're a citizen." Which, like, as a matter of policy, like, that sounds great. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, wow.
No, but also that's retarded because, no, it's never, like...
It's never going to work, but, you know...
No, of the characters involved, it's none of them... It's almost explicit. It's never, like, laid out, but of the main Buenos Aires, I guess we can call them, because it's a funny name to call them. Of the Buenos Aires, like, the four main... The three or four kids, none of their parents are citizens.
Right. Right,
like at no point.
John Enrico's parents,
no
one super wealthy libtards.
Yes, like he's got a spot in Harvard, and like you know,
and they're not citizens.
It's,
yeah,
it's never ever mentioned that anyone's parents were in the military.
Right,
explicitly, like no one's, which is a weird. Usually, every war movie has that as a trope. Like, oh, my dad's a colonel and whatever, whatever. That's why I'm here. Hell, in the real military, you see that a lot. Like,
I think there's
you know,
also
my...
a thematic disconnect in that, like, because they comment a couple times on how quickly the bugs reproduce, and when they're in school, high school, you know, biology class, they talk about the bugs reproduction and all this. So it's obviously kind of, you know, talking about, like, yes, bug reproduction is a way of talking about human reproduction. But the thing is, it's like, you know, when later on in the film, when a character remarks, oh, you know, they're out reproducing us, it's like, okay, well, that's a kind of implicit argument against, you know, one child policy or whatever it is, you know, the only citizens can breed or something like this, which again is not to say, like, obviously I think it should go without saying that as a general matter, eugenic policy is a good idea, as if a population is not in eugenesis, definitionally it's in dysgenesis, right? So like eugenics is just a moral requirement for a functional society. Now how you go about doing that is, you know, That's a different question, but yeah, there was a thematic disconnect between, like, it's at some level, if the issue is that there aren't enough humans, like making enough, or that the bugs are out reproducing us, then making more humans seems like a natural and you know, just a response.
No,
thing,
it's
right?
it's a really stupid insert to do, like, the license to have kids thing, because it's just, you know, I think it's literally just bad writing. It's a Verhoeven wanted some more fascism in this scene, so he added some fascism with the scene with the tits. Like, it's whatever. What do numbers even mean in the context of both explicitly all-volunteer army and, like, planet-wiping battles? Like if you wipe the enemy species from the planet, like, it doesn't matter what their birth rate was, right? Like, if you lose a battle and every human's wiped from the planet, it doesn't matter what the...
Or how old they
relative,
were, or anything like that.
Yeah, like the, it's very stupid.
Well, the thing
I
with
really
the kids,
hate
like,
that
so there
line.
Were two. There were two the, scenes that had, like, there was one. There was, like, an advertisement, you know, one of these tongue-in-cheek advertisements for the military, where they're handing out, you know, battle rifles to, like, 12-year-olds, and the 12-year-olds are like, "Ooh, cool." Which, like, duh, I mean, that, you know, it's like, okay. And obviously, he's playing on, like, libtard ideas about the inappropriateness of kids handling firearms, but honestly, those kids were pretty, like, that was strictly a matter of Verhoeven's cultural prejudices, because there was, you know, he was trying to make it look weird, but it actually just looked kind of based. But then in one of the final scenes where they're getting these new recruits, and they look like, well, that was the other thing I guess we could talk about. So the new recruits are visibly young teenagers, which... It's the characters are supposed, you know, Rico and his friends are supposed to be fresh out of high school graduates, but they all look like, which they were at the time, like they're in their 20s. Like, in no way are these characters convincing as, like, 17 or 18 year olds at any point, just visually. So that,
yeah, they're Buenos Aires, right? Like, they're,
I guess, yeah. I
mean, they're extremely Aryan looking, you know.
Oh, is that what you were? But I didn't get your joke until just that's funny. Yeah. That's good.
Strong jaws in Buenos Aires.
And his hair is always, like, perfectly coiffed and every. I was like, I get what you're doing at a certain level, and I do appreciate having the, you know, Aryan Ubermensch archetype.
Well,
getting
into this, why where
the hair was distracting.
So Casper Van Dien, who I like, who isn't in enough movies. He clearly, actually, I'm going to say no one really like if you're gonna do like the Verhoeven, it's a satire, media literacy. None of the actors knew because he's fucking selling it to the nines.
Yeah, like
I'm from Buenos Aires and I say kill them all. He there is not a touch of like hesitancy or like there's no faggoty nuance in that quote.
That's right? It's strictly a BTO of the journal. So to rewind and see, because I hadn't this was a part that I hadn't like seen in this way. The way that scene works is the journalist is a libtard, which like also side note, the most based part of this film is not the uniforms. It's how Verhoeven just shits on journalists and the voyeurism of the camera. Like, the movie opens famously with the journalist reporting and then he gets killed. Then which I had seen that scene. I hadn't seen the full later scene when he like when we're, after the rewind and we go back and now we're doing the invasion of Glendathu. So the journalist who's reporting on the battle, who I believe is the same journalist in the I Say Kill 'Em All scene, he gets like grabbed up by one of the bugs. And as he's being like cut in half by the mandibles of this alien, his cameraman like points up the camera like, ooh, I'm going to get this great shot of this dude getting cut in half. And then, of course, the cameraman also gets killed. But I was struck by like, okay, I don't think this is a scene that's in the book, and there is no script here. Like the cameraman who's pointing his camera up at the bug doesn't get any lines. So this is like Verhoeven himself, the man, like directing a sequence where he's essentially making fun of the proclivity of journalists to do like. The correspondent in the middle of the hurricane, like getting shit on by like it's.
There was some of that, but I think also he was doing like a Goebbels thing. Like he's like,
okay,
we're in their shitty country, and I'm like, he's like as they're losing the battle, like attacking like the morality of the bugs in their shitty country. Like I think they were doing some like press because he's doing full throated propaganda at this point, right? Like it's a. We're on the planet. It's a bad planet
for
bad race.
But I was really struck though by the
they're doing more things than one at a time for sure. Yes. Like they're doing more.
Yes. And then to go back to what you were talking about before with the I'm from Buenos Aires, I say kill them all. Like the journalist is a libtard and he's trying to do a nuance, right? And which is like another thing. Oh yeah, there was another scene where there's like a literal like bow tied conservative doing like it's George W. Bush. Post 9/11 stuff, just before 9/11. As far as we know, the bugs think. Are you crazy? These bugs don't think. Kind of stuff. And it's being played for laughs. So the journalist is doing the libtard, like, well, maybe we should try to understand them. Maybe we don't need to fight this war. And Johnny's like, fuck you, you stupid fucking libtard journalist. Get the fuck out of here, right? Where I say kill them all, and everybody cheers. There's no irony. There's no. I guess the cameraman kind of looks. Or sorry, the journalist kind of looks at Verhoeven's camera, but he doesn't like say anything. It's very clear. I mean, there's no sense in which there's any kind of implication of there's anything wrong with Rico's perspective. It's literally just rah rah yeah. Let's fucking kill them all.
Well, yeah, that's the danger when libtards try to do this thing where they like you're fighting literal aliens.
That was so many of them. Literally identifying with the bugs. They're like, oh, the bugs are, look at these bugs. They didn't do anything wrong. Like,
they're
know.
Just like I am not
on
like
Twitter,
a,
I mean, yeah.
I was never a fire breathing, like Arab hater at any point. Mm-hmm. Cause I was just too young. I was alive for 9/11, but it wasn't like, I wasn't enough to get like juiced about. I was sad, not angry. Right. Like that's how old I was. Right. It was like, oh, that's very sad. Like, but even like, I didn't cry tears over it. I was just too young. The kind of incoherent, like murder them all thing is like obviously like more morally troubling when it's like actually
with humans, yeah.
With humans and also it's Jews running the system, so they're gonna actually import a bunch of those Arabs into your country while to subvert your kill them all rage. The government, even in like Paul Verhoeven's version of this system, is not like importing bug like guest neighbors to Earth. Like, I'm sorry, it's not happening. Like,
there's no bugs like, opening actually, a kebab shop in Berlin. Yeah.
It's they're going to kill them all. Like killing them all is actually more moral than what happened in a lot of ways. Like, and like, or like, well, it wasn't more. It would be obviously nuking like Middle East would be evil, but like, subverting that energy to achieve like your bizarre, like, Jewish racial ends is like really fucked up and like unsettling in a way that kill them all is not. Like,
I was old enough to. I was doing Nuance. I like Mike Enoch. You know, I was, that was very much sort of my entry point into this politics was essentially having a kind of bougie priors, bougie cultural background, but all, you know, which combined with opposition to the Iraq war led me to where I am in many ways. But as opposed to, as I always was to the Iraq war, it pretty much always struck me as like, I was viscerally revolted by, yeah, that kind of, you know, glass the Middle East kind of rhetoric. I was upset about I'm a little older than you, and I was upset about 9/11, and I thought it was totally justified to go into Afghanistan. I didn't understand at the time, like, you know, all of this stuff about the Mossad involvement and all this. I was just, but to me, you know, taking it as a kind of surface level thing, it was very clear, like, okay, well, you planned and executed this operation that killed thousands of my people. Like, you, I'm sorry, but, you know, this demands a response. And then with the whole Iraq WMDs thing, it was like, this is just retarded. Like, how does anyone take this seriously? This has no connection whatsoever to 9/11. It's interesting also that I think the bug planets are like desert planets, but the whole movie takes place before 9/11. I don't know how much of that is, because I don't think they were described explicitly as desert environments in the book, were they? Again, it's been decades since I read it.
So they're not really so the skinny planet, which is like the third race, it actually kind of, it's a, that's where Kylan's doing some more like politics as warfare, because like the skinnies are on side with the bugs, and then the humans raid their territory and make it clear like you're going to be on our side actually, because they do like
the skinnies, as I recall.
It's kind of fuzzy, like, yeah, that's probably that. or trading with them or something, like there was something going on where the skinnies and the bugs had some kind of understanding, and the humans were there to like doing, they were like raiding them and fucking up their stuff to like doing politics by other means, or, you know, warfare. It was a pretty brief aside for some Clausewitzian stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Also the humans at that point are very weak in the war. Like, it's like all they can do is raids. So like raids against the skinnies are better than raids against the bugs. Mm. But the bugs are an underground species in the book. It's never really mentioned what they're.
Yeah, what they're like, the top of the surface environments of the planet.
The one planet they go to seems like it's pretty clear. Like, they're jumping around hills and valleys and field the plains. But like, so, but like, could be, you know. But yeah, they're very much an underground
species. Well, the movie then was also all the more striking. Go on.
The Screw Pirate definitely has red armor, for sure, because the scene with like the outpost defense is straight out of Armor. Mm-hmm. Armor has a scene where it's basically like one of the human tactic. Cause it's a very similar thing with like fighting the bugs. There's a human tactic which is like, we set up these like bastions on these planets in places where they can't tunnel under us, and like just supply them with enough ammunition and troops to like break them until like the bugs run out of bugs. In like the very like square, like just machine guns everywhere around them, kind of things. And that's clearly referencing that book, I think, says more clearly that they're more deserty planets, because all three of these books have like kind of influenced each other and portrayals of each other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where that scene comes out of. It's coming out of Armor.
I mention it is because it seems almost like an anachronism. Like it's the kind of thing where if it had come out after 9/11, it would obviously be a heavy-handed metaphor for the Middle East. But because it came out prior to 9/11, it's almost just like, it's just like scenery that works for the demands of the movie, you know?
Like I said, I was like literally a year old when this movie came out, but I do know there, like, the Middle East was kind of the default, like, bullshit war
there,
place.
Yeah,
you know?
There was an understanding, like, for sure. And it's
Well, let's look at Lebanon, Black Hawk Down. Like, these things had already happened, right? Like, the Middle East was, like, where you did pointless war. So, I can see. Also, it's cheap to film in California in the desert, too. Like,
I think that's the main thing. That's what I'm saying. Is like, it almost comes across more as, like, a practical consideration than an ideological one in any way.
Well, it's easy to film because it doesn't rain. There's no like weather to deal with, so lighting's always good, you know.
And you're right by the studio.
Yeah, people underrate how like hard it is to film in a forest, because if you're filming a scene for 5 hours, the sun will move around so much that like the shadows are dramatically different. Like, you actually get continuity errors. Filming in a forest is a big pain in the ass because the sun moves faster than you think. If you're shooting a scene over and over again, you know, for many hours straight, if you don't like hang out in forests a lot, you don't in like one spot, which is kind of a rare thing to do unless you're like in the military
or you really like hunting.
Filming a movie. Yeah. You don't realize how much, like, if you're sitting in the shade, like, the shade moves, and that creates, like, lighting issues and continuity. The desert is a great place to film, so. Mm. Also, it never rains. Mm. Yeah, where's about?
I was trying to remember. I was like, where were
released. But, there also is, like, I think you mentioned, like, the Dixie scene.
Yes, that was a scene that I hadn't,
That's actually Jake Busey playing that on a violin, too.
Really?
Like the actor actually learned the
that's amazing.
How to play Dixie. So yeah,
yeah. I was just sort of like, oh, they. And of course, he takes out it's a space violin, so it has to be made out of green plastic. But then, you know, they start dancing. Oh, this is fun. I'm like, wait a second, that's fucking Dixie. Like, that's quite heavy. I mean, it sounded great. That was the other thing about the rendition of Dixie in that scene was.
It's very sad, and then speeds up as the scene.
Yeah.
As the scene is sad, it's slow. As the scene gets like more optimistic, it gets more optimistic,
and just very well, like musically very well done. Yeah. I was quite impressed with it's not the kind of that's a touch that I don't think you would see. I mean, just to go through the effort, first of all, to have
well, also this is where Verhoeven is a fucking Eurotrash fucking drooling retard, because it's like it's supposed to be a subtly dark scene, like, oh, it's like playing Horst Wessel lead or whatever, like they're playing the evil song, but it's like sad and poignant, but they're actually evil, and everyone in America's like, oh, that's Dixie, sweet. Like, because he's a Euro trash retard, doesn't understand it. He really like he makes like good movies because he works hard. I think that's a lot of it. His like secret is he puts a lot of effort into them, but like he's not American, and it really kind of hurts what he's trying to do. Now that because what he's trying to do is retarded, it makes the movie better. Like he is not smart enough or engine with America enough to like sabotage what he wants to sabotage to make his shit shitty and liberal, so it actually works again. But like the idea, no American from this time or even now is like actually offended. No one is actually offended or scared by Dixie. Not even like mulatto Jewesses actually get like
yeah.
Terrified.
No, it's just everyone, a fun like, song. Like there's no, it's not like threatening or something. It's just
yeah. Dixie is like it's as they say straight fire. Like I don't get used to, like it's awesome. Like
who doesn't love Dixie?
Great. Get over it. Like everyone, if you hear like a bar, people just start grinning when they hear Dixie. You know,
yeah,
it's a thing. Like if you ever hear a car horn that's like Dixie, everyone like hears it and they just like crack a smile, and like it's how it is. I'm sorry, it's
not scary. Yeah, the idea was it's supposed to be somehow ominous or whatever. This you know an indication of this fascist society being bad. You know, because it's like nah. But cool music though for the great scene. I also wanted the fight scene between. Rico and his what do you want to call it? His rival for the affections of absolutely stunningly beautiful
Xander.
Denise Richards.
Xander,
yeah,
Xander, a great name for like a handsomer rival than you,
right?
Xander,
but the Mazzy Star, you know, fade into you during their fist fight was I was like, this is gold. That's just perfect. Yeah, there were all these beautiful little touches.
I had no idea that was I just thought it was like that song. That's an age gap. I don't know what the fuck Mazzy Star was. I just know
it's just a cool scene to me. It's femoid kind of. It was just it's yeah. It doesn't really. I guess that is definitely an age gap kind of thing. But just the incongruence, I guess, of like it's this kind of slow romantic ballad. As they're exchanging blows was quite good. And then, on a similar note, in terms of
also, there's a big subversion in that scene that I like, where it's like, oh, you know, they're talking shit. Enlisted is talking shit to an officer, and he's like, oh, I won't punch an officer. And the officer says, well, like, ignore rank. And usually that means like, whatever. They just yell more or just talk more. As soon as he says like disregard rank, he gets punched in the face.
He's like, what are you gonna do about it? And he fucking turns around. Like, yeah, it's great.
Like, so, yeah, it's that's almost never happens in like. More films, IRL, but like it's yeah. like, Or no, that never happens IRL. People, yeah. No one actually ever says to disregard rank IRL because people who have rank really enjoy having rank. yeah, that was a great subversion of like, well, disregard ranks, do what you want to do, and then just gets rocked.
I was thinking about actually, there's a recent thread by longtime member of the community, and he's been a guest on the Third Rail, Mr. X, who was in the Marines. I guess I should say is a Marine. Says he noticed on Twitter that he got a page 11 disciplinary proceedings because he asked a staff sergeant to step out into the parking lot for an extended discussion of the limits of his authority. Someone noticed everybody hated him, of course, and Mr. X continues, of course, because he was the kind of shit staff sergeant who ran and cut paper instead of beating your ass. And I think this, there was a time where, you know, boxing rings were just standard features of military bases, right? And
and the death, that is one thing that has been basically totally removed. In any way. Famously, the Wehrmacht has their famous fitness manual, which you can purchase from Antelope Hill, who, friend of the show. The Wehrmacht has their, like, fitness stuff, their fitness manual, their exercise routines. The Waffen-SS took a very different tact with fitness and replaced pretty much all physical training with just boxing.
Yeah, I mean...
That sounds like, hyper-based. It is hyper-based. But it wasn't, like, unheard of at the time. Like, a lot of physical training was boxing or wrestling or some kind of, like, athletic combative type thing. And that's pretty much totally gone. It's been... what combatives there are formalized into, like, very specialized training. You have to, like, even... some of it's even, like, opt-in. You have to opt into combative training sometimes. It's pretty much gone. And so is the... well, that's the problem is that... fighting in the military, or fighting, like, people having other ranks going to leave to, like, to fight each other and, like, settle differences, it doesn't really quite always work because sometimes the person who's in the wrong is good at fighting. You know, like, there are flaws with that system. But, it is better than the, like... like, to the point where, you know, I don't know. Military discipline is all fucked up because you can get paperwork that is just paperwork. It doesn't actually affect you in any way. Except for the Marines, where, like, the Marines are kind of a unique case where paperwork can fuck your career up because, like, it's so competitive on certain things. Like,
Mr. X knows he did make corporal on time, supposedly.
It can fuck you up. The biggest thing is, like, but a lot of, like, in the Army... like, counseling is like, fuck you, like, counsel me. It's called a counseling, you know, paperwork. It creates the kind of breakdown discipline stuff, but I don't want to get too deep into it, but, like, that aspect of, like, the modern military, we've done a lot of modern military posting, but yes, the discipline system is one of the one things that is fucked up, and it was historically backstopped by, like, you know, what if we just did violence and, like, kind of had this out, but, now that's not really an option anymore for a lot of reasons. Increased softerness of senior enlisted guys, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like, staff sergeants would be able to beat your ass, right? Or at least it'd be like,
they would be the toughest, meanest guys in the unit is the idea.
Yeah. And it's not so much anymore for, I think, a number of reasons. But not that they're, like, all pathetic. It's just, like, people have gotten good at, like, a lot of it is, like, things the military couldn't control. Like, if a guy does, like, jiu-jitsu or boxing on the side, he's just going to smash anybody who's just, like, a soldier, you know? Just the way it is. And that stuff's gotten a lot more popular than it used to be. Like, because a lot of, like, karate shit was actually bullshit, you know? Like... martial arts have improved so dramatically that, like, some shithead private who does a little jiu-jitsu, like, a couple times a week is going to be able to choke every fucking, you know, senior NCO who wants to fight him. So it's hard to, like, deal with these things in a lot of ways. But, like, also you could just, like, you know, have a good system of military like discipline and order, you know, like and not require these like the fight the physical fights were a backstop that lasted hard to tell when they started because they were there when I was in from like probably lasted from the end of the let's say end of Vietnam until because Vietnam is where military order kind of fell apart in like a lot of ways. And, like, physical violence from people ahead of you in rank was there until 2015, and now it's just gone. But it was a backstop for, like, actually having a good, motivated, sincere, like, army. So, yeah, what you gonna do? Like, I'm glad it's gone because it means the military is even softer and more retarded and less of a problem for me as someone who hates the U.S. government, you know? So,
sure, whatever. That makes sense.
Are we talking about? Oh yeah, Starship Troopers. Yeah, yeah.
Well, the scene. Well, I mean, just the
The fight scene. Yeah, like
well,
the
many which is fight notable. Scenes. I mean, you know, to spell it out, like I think the relevance is the portrayal of not a classless society, but one where social distinctions are a matter of honor and prestige, tied to martial prowess. More yeah. so than
like it's very yeah. good that Xander like the Xander knows how to fight too.
Yes, that like, was the it would have been a different movie or a different setting. Like the officer would have just had his ass beat by the enlisted guy because he was a namby-pamby who didn't know how to fight.
Yep, and not so much. And then Xander also was like is personally heroic and courageous. Like he's never actually a bad guy. He's just like
no
a
yeah.
rival. You know,
yeah.
And he's kind not, of a pretty know. Boy, but like it's not like
yes,
yeah.
And he's also a talented athlete. You know, they have the scene early on where, you know, Rico is the hometown hero for the local sports ball team. But Xander is also the same thing, just for a different local sports ball team. Right? And
Yeah.
And smarter than Rico because he placed into piloting rather than... Although I will say it's not so...
This is the... Oh, I hate this part. Sorry.
Okay, so let's talk about... like so because Rico's not dumb, even though he scored 35% on math, right?
Book Rico and movie Rico are very different.
Yeah.
Movie Rico is, I think he's not dumb though. Like it's weird. Like it's, he's just like Neil Patrick Harris's like, you know, jock friend. I don't know. I guess they're just playing the jock tropes a lot harder. But, like, the attending Harvard thing is, like, clearly a...
Well, okay, so I did want to talk... Because, actually, yeah. Spectre brought this up independently in our Third Rail group chat. And because he and it was actually as I had just... I was watching, he was just reflecting on Starship Troopers as I was watching it. And he made this point of, like, it's a weird incongruity in what is otherwise a very good film that Rico scores 35% on his math exams, but he got into Harvard. And I was like, yeah, but the thing is... This is like you got to put yourself in Heinlein's mind because okay yes
no already, this is
okay
this is not in
it is not in the book okay yeah that's okay no. So then
in the book is very clear that the navy pilots are all female mm-hmm. or vast
pretty
majority
much
of
living. All in the book too but yeah
except for yeah Xander, like they're saying was Xander movie, actually yeah. in the navy as a pilot or was he intelligence
he was an instructor. It wasn't clear. I don't think he ever got a formal. He was a piloting instructor.
I kind of want to pull the quote because I think the
Carl quote is before they, intelligence, but I don't know. Yeah, maybe he's intelligence.
But the
too.
Quote before they fight, he says something about like that military like mobile infantry aren't dumb enough to hit an officer, but he might say intelligence officer. He says like, I really want to find because. It'll because he's not driving the plane when they're in the ship, or the lander, you know.
He's like second chair or whatever. He's just there on the bridge
in the shot. Yeah. No, I guess I'm looking at the quote. It didn't say it's just they don't. He just says private and officer. They don't say like what he's an officer of. But yeah, in the book, I mean, Xander's not a character in the fucking.
In the book.
Yeah,
yeah. I was...
And then he misses out on piloting because of a reflex issue. Like, he's not... He doesn't have the...
Okay, it's not a...
Hand-eye... It's like a hand-eye thing.
Interesting.
Or Heinlein is doing all female Navy, but not really. Like, it's like most, like, our pilots, all pilots, are female or like have a major advantage, and all the infantrymen are male, you know, as they were up until, like, when I joined the infantry, they were all male, and then and then it changed while I was in, which is whatever. But like, because infantryman, like, the job is infantryman, it's in the title,
right?
Yeah. So I guess he is a pilot or some kind of naval thing, but whatever. The idea that he would be good at fighting. The book actually gets very deep into, like, because Rico becomes an officer in the book, not by like a kind of a field promotion. Rico goes to officer school, like, very specifically. Like, there's two extended, like, school. Like, there's, like, the initial part of the book is the school, like, the what is it, morality, society morality, what's it called, society morality, or the class it's called. You remember what I'm talking about?
Oh,
like,
yeah, I don't remember the
society morality class, something or something like that. Or like morals and citizenship or something, whatever. That's like a very extended, like lecture scene and like question, like kind of like very Socratic type thing where it's like,
yes,
a guy,
yes,
giving a lesson to a questioner, and owning him, right? But in a friendly, like, educational way. The scene repeats in like more granular detail when he goes to officer candidate school. And it's like, he talks about like the things that are more like objection, like less like why rank has privileges, like why certain things is, and it points out in a pretty insane and thing they probably obviously wouldn't put this movie because it would be like longer, so much longer, but in this book society, to become sky marshal, which is like,
yeah, it's president, supreme leader or whatever, yeah,
who is actually also in a weird system, which I think is interesting, actively a member of the military. He's not actually a, like, he's a politician, yes, but he's still a member of the, like, I think he's elected. It gets interesting there. Like, because, like, you don't get to vote till you leave the military, but the Sky Marshal is an active member of the military, it seems. Is that you have to attain the rank of general in the Army and also then leave into the Navy and attain the rank of admiral to, like, qualify
yeah,
for
right,
Sky Marshal.
Qualify for the position.
Which is, yeah, and both services, or I guess in the Army, it means you have to start as a private. Again, which is like, these things are like more like post-World War II military fantasy stuff. Like,
sure,
soldiers fantasy, when you had these massive armies, a lot of people, like these big conscript armies of the Second World War and Korea that Heinlein, you know, kind of is reflecting on, there was like always this tension of like people who are actually smart are enlisted because of like the draft, and they're not all made into officers. These people are dumber officers and, you know, put in charge without having been enlisted. And in the fantasy in Star Troopers is that, like, actually to be a infantry officer, you have to have served as an enlisted person and been, like, kind of picked by your officer as you have potential, which happens to Rico when he's a corporal. And there's that. It's interesting. In the book, I forgot something important. There's the violence scene. Like I mentioned, like, the violence and, like, discipline via violence in the military. There's a very important scene in the book that describes how this works in a very idealized fashion, where Rico and a soldier he has an issue with go to fight, and Rico loses the fight. He gets his ass beat. And while he's, like, on the ground, like, basically having given up, the guy makes Rico punch him in the face and give him black eye, so that, like, because he's still going to, like, he respected Rico, that Rico fought him, and, you know, even if he lost the fight, he's still going to listen to Rico in the future because he, like, sees that the guy's serious. Because the issue was that Rico had been, like, promoted over him, and he didn't know who this guy was, and they had issues on the mission. That is a very idealized way of how, like, that the theoretically, oh, well, actually, the higher-ranked person could lose the fight, but because the lower-ranked person is so, like, honor-bound, he would not tell anyone that he beat the guy above him. And in fact, imply he lost the fight by having a black eye, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not how, like, America does not have that level of, like, abstraction and honor culture. The book gets into abstraction a lot, more so, like, the movie's very direct. The book discusses how, like, all these ideals are, like, things you have to consciously embrace as, like, abstractions, like country or species even, or nation. Like, anything more than your family, you have to, like, totally, like, or... Like you have to choose, like opt. It's very about opting in. The whole system in the book is all about constantly opting in to more and more responsibility or pressure, and you can always opt out, right? That's a very important thing in the book, is the ability to opt out.
Yeah, the punishment of washing out is, it's not necessary. I mean, it wasn't any sense of like, oh, you're going to go to jail or something. It's the shame of being a washout.
But even as Rico goes up the chain and gets more responsibility, you're always allowed to turn down promotions. And OCS, he wouldn't be kicked out of the army. He would just be, if he failed, he would be sent back to just being a corporal again or a sergeant. Because he takes OCS and instead of going to sergeant school. And like, so there's always like, he's always opting into greater and greater, authority and influence, but, and challenge and like hardship, but he's always opting in. And there's one thing with this that I want to bring up, because it's obviously not in the movie, because they Rico's parents die at the end of the book. It's implied that like there's a big push for recruiting on Earth, and Rico's dad joins up and ends up serving under him in kind of a interesting thing there. Like his dad is a libtard, but when faced with, because they don't live in Buenos Aires, they live in Manila, I think, right? And yeah, or somewhere in the Philippines.
Something like that.
After Earth gets attacked, there's Johnny Rico's dad joins the infantry. And even though he's like in his supposed to be in his 40s or late 40s. And like, it's like, even the libtard can be cured by like existential fucking, war. And I think that's like a more of reference to like, I think like the World War II stuff, where like actually everyone went. Cause there is like, it's the shift, not from like the all volunteer army where the book starts, to the wartime footing where it's kind of the war, like, so the society is fascist, but like, it's not, it's there's this kind of, it's not totally untrue myth about America that I think is being referenced here, where during World War II, when it started, there were so many volunteers that there actually did overwhelm like recruitment in a lot of ways. And they had to like put a halt on volunteerism and begin a draft only to get like the right numbers and the right types of people initially. So there was like there were draftees who wanted to join and were this is like first couple of years of the war. Then eventually it kind of opened up to everybody and draftees. But I think that there's kind of like that thing you wouldn't know about if not for, growing up in that era. Cause it's kind of a weird like lost piece of history that there was this like, when the society's attacked, because like Buenos Aires is it's a Pearl Harbor analog, obviously. People do join who wouldn't otherwise join this volunteer army, and and then become like made good by it, right? Although it is kind of a hilarious that like the training as described in the book is like pretty insane. It's like there are like flaws, because Kylan was a naval officer. He wasn't wasn't in the infantry. The training I heard in the book is like, with the washout rate they give, it's a mixture of like what would you consider modern, especially like special forces drop rates, but they're doing like just insane, like, movements and running and rucking and stuff. There's absolutely no way you could actually like field, like run civilians through this course and like meaningful rates. Like the drop rate would be insane, and it is in the book. But then you couldn't also like field a regular army at this rate. There is some weirdness with like Heinlein not being quite as savvy as he thinks he is, and that's why that is like probably the better pro of the book, is that the guys aren't all like they're not like power armored hyper soldiers. They're just like people with guns. I think it's better in a lot of ways to be that. It makes more sense also, like, even if you did have power armor hyper soldiers in your army, you would still have regular like grunts in unpowered armor with guns, like, obviously, to like, you can't have everybody.
Not everyone's
like
gonna have the most expensive power armor.
Yeah, right? Well, not everybody's gonna be a tank, right? It's like analogous to a tank. It's like, well, not everybody's gonna be a tank driver. You know, you have guys who just like, defend spots. So,
I really like both products, but I think the book is far superior and is like, you know.
Well, it's a book. One of those, you know, it's...
Yeah, but it's also like, I think it is one of those things that's like kind of in a class of its own. Like I mentioned, like the Iliad or Berserk or like these certain like works of fiction that are like fundamentally important for humanity, I think. Even if not everybody likes them, like there is like such massive value in these things. That also that they're just like not, it's like, it's also just one of the few works that isn't operating from like liberal priors or libtard priors. It's like, it's there, so therefore it's more true. I don't think you can do good libtard fiction. It just doesn't quite work.
Libtard is,
well, actually, like, I take that back. Right? I take that. There is, what's the Braveheart. Braveheart is probably about as good as libtard fiction can get.
How is Braveheart libtarded?
It's all about like,
freedom!
Like
freedom.
Freedom, yes. Anarchist, like, it's like they're like importing democracy on the Scots, you know. It's doing like,
yeah, okay, I can see that.
It's based in like violent, but it is like the priors of that film are libtarded, absolute power corrupting and things like that, you know.
I wanted to go back though because I didn't quite finish the thought, but it ties to this, yeah, this libtarded thing about Harvard. So yeah, as I said, it's been a very long time since I read the book. And I thought I don't remember him getting like a 35% or anything like that, or that he was portrayed as my recollection, which it seems is correct, is that it was more about presenting the infantry as like in some way equally prestigious or maybe more prestigious in certain ways than other combat roles that aren't. That don't involve directly fighting, right?
It is. It's true.
Yeah, and so in other words, that like because with the 35% math thing and the kind of attitude of some of the Ace Levy, so the kind of meathead, one of his meathead, you know, rival slash friend, slash brother in arms, like is he supposed to be Jewish? Is that like Levy? Like, because I mean the character's name is Levy. And I don't recall this character from the book, but again, it's been forever. The name Levy stuck out to me. Is why I don't know if you have any sense of that.
I don't.
It don't really matter. I was just,
yeah.
It just was some. But the point is, the character is presented in the movie. Like at one point, you know, there's this open squad leader position, and Rico says, Levy, why don't you take it? And he says, Nah. I just want to fight. You know, I tried that once already. I screwed it up. I just like fighting. And he, in general, is presented as is the kind of, you know, the dumb farmer kid who gets his head blown off during the training accident, as kind of, yeah, like it is a sense in which the infantry, it's not about pursuing martial glory in a very dangerous way. And it's not necessarily something that's going to be attractive to highly intelligent people. It's more of like, oh, you know, this is what you do if you're dumb and you can't make it as a pilot, can't make it in the Navy, which is definitely different. And the other side of that, or the another like aspect of that, is this disc, which I mentioned. And it's good to, because I was like, I don't remember this thing in the book. I think essentially it's a comment on legacy admissions, is the idea, like he's clearly this kind of pretty boy, preppy kid, rich parents, sports ball, you know, athlete. And so I think it was the line about Harvard, or the, you know, not actually multiple lines of Harvard is kind of a theme in a certain way.
They're going to Harvard. That's final.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a libtard's idea of legacy admissions. And like, of course, you know, he's dumb, but his parents are rich and he's an athlete. So of course he can go to Harvard. Right. And in some ways, that was the Harvard of, I mean, not that like Harvard was a finishing school until the standardized test revolution, which, I mean, again, that's a whole other topic. It'd be a great topic because actually it's been in the discourse recently too. And of course, it's a perennial topic of concern. But yeah, in the old days, like, you know, essentially the dynamic was it was a finishing school for WASPy elites. Jews didn't like that. They didn't like being excluded. So they were, you know, as a matter of policy, deliberately excluded. So that was the initial big push for standardized testing was, oh, we just want, you know, the smartest kids to go to the best schools. Even though at that time, like, Harvard was prestigious and produced a fair amount of scholarship and was influential within academia in certain ways, wasn't necessarily the, quote unquote, the best school, right? In large part because, like, that wasn't exactly what they were going for. And yes,
yeah, I think if you read like books about like the OSS or like the Manhattan Project, it's pretty clear MIT is like the big school at this point.
MIT and Princeton were the leaders intellectually. It wasn't, you know, Harvard
and then Stanford was, in California.
Yeah, and on the West Coast, right?
Yeah,
but Harvard was not up until very really more like the '80s. I would say considered like the number one destination.
A lot of that also is the finance stuff. Like
yes,
like the Ivy League. The Ivy League's prestige is connected to the fact that they can place people at like Goldman Sachs, right? Yeah. And it's because America is a society based only on money at this point. There are no more high. Every higher ideal has been destroyed by like
a paper. It really took off in the, you know, late 70s, early 80s. Yeah. So yeah, that tracks for sure.
So I think that's more connected. Harvard's prestige is much more connected to that than people I think want to admit in a lot of ways.
It depends on which people, but yes, it's yes for sure.
It's not a good school. If that makes sense. Like it's not a. It's
it never has been like right like that was never yeah. what it was really about. To put on the mole bug hat for a second, you know, Harvard was founded as a theological seminary for insane Protestants and kind of never changed. Right? Like this is an explicitly ideological institution pushing a very particular ideology.
Also, it was like honestly underrated, like how important it was. Harvard's big contribution in my mind is like being a med school that wasn't like quackery at that point. Like being a non-quack med school.
Although even there, Johns Hopkins is like the number one, right?
Better, but still, like just like existing at that point in time, like, you know, as early as old as it is, like just not being actively quacks.
Yeah,
probably did more good for society than all the
quack med,
you know, presidents and lawyers and whatever.
You know, that's true.
The Ivy League should be destroyed. Blah blah blah.
No, yeah. We could keep the buildings are pretty. We keep the nice buildings. Just the rest of it, you know, redacted. Brandenburg v. Ohio.
Okay, I want to talk one more thing about fascist democracy in this.
Okay, yeah.
This movie has a very important scene. That there's, I think, was like Verhoeven asleep at the wheel, not being a libtard, or just like, I guess it was it's Neumeier was the writer, right? Was it Ed Neumeier?
Yeah, it was the writer, yes.
Yeah. The scene where like the Kathmandu fuck up happens, or
Kathmandu, fuck, now I forget. Yeah, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
The alien planet.
Kathmandu. Calling Kathmandu is funnier. Kathmandu, it's whatever. But the Sky Marshal, the president, dictator, figure of this society, resigns in disgrace, and it's a black woman being replaced by a white guy. The black female Sky Marshal. But like in every, but the thing is, this is why it's not like a good satire at all. It's because in like your fascist satires, the dictator fucks up massively and doesn't resign, and that's like that's a real indictment of the system. Is this guy is like. You know, and it happens in real life. Like Saddam famously lost the Iran-Iraq war, pretty much, and like declared victory and like didn't resign, right? And that was like because the Ba'ath Party is a dictatorship. And I'm not saying that the person in charge always resigned when there's a fuck up, but the idea of like this person does a bad job and then they are replaced by somebody and they take responsibility and resign is so foreign to the American or like the liberal system in every single way. It's almost like. It just seems like a hard endorsement of fascism. Like when you see this scene, it's like, oh,
yeah.
So like, well, it's just a better system
because fascism is an honor culture, and libtards have no understanding of honor. It's just literally.
Yeah.
I would actually connect it back to the eugenics thing. Like essentially, you know, blowing out. Okay, we can, you know, temporarily again to put the mole bug hat on and kind of set the Jewish question to the side, blowing out like in a big theoretical terms. I think. You can understand liberalism, or you know, whatever you want to call this this ideology, as being very much the core of it is the obliteration of distinctions between higher and lower, better and worse, beautiful and ugly, and so on. And you see this in art, right? And you see this explicitly, you know, throwback to my some of my older listeners. But we used to have a podcast called Westward. We had an episode on Percy Shelley and essentially the Luciferian ideology of 19th century liberalism, which is very much about, you know, Prometheus Unbound and going back to Milton and portraying Lucifer as a sympathetic figure. Right. Like this is, you know, and Prometheus himself, of course, also the light bringer, the bringer of fire to humanity. And the whole poem is an endorsement of this idea of essentially like it's like Jupiter, you know, the king of the gods, which is to say the Christian god, is unfair because he doesn't recognize, you know, Prometheus just wants to, you know, exert his individualistic will against the divine order. Right. And this is valorized. This is because the concept of divine order for liberalism is itself suspect, because there is no, ultimately all orders are divine order. Right. So like it's the concept of order itself that is suspect. And it becomes an endorsement of like not even a Dionysian chaos, but just like something even more inchoate than that. It's just, again, the obliteration of any and all distinctions. And so no, you cannot have, how can you have a concept of honor in a society that like rejects the idea, like really it rejects the idea of immorality, you know, to the extent that immorality is like whatever, to the only kind of immorality that liberal society is willing to recognize is the immorality of insisting on distinctions. It's the Popper paradox, the paradox of tolerance thing, right, that you mentioned earlier. Like it's not so much in the end that we can tolerate everything except intolerance. It's that, well, or maybe even that's just the really where it comes down. But yeah, it's literally our only principle is there are no principles. Our only rule is there are no rules. And anyone who, like, the way you break that rule is by saying, you know, I think this should be a law. You know, like, I think this should be a rule about that. And like, now that's what makes you the bad guy.
Yep, pretty much. I mean, and then to go deeper, all right, now we're, Mulbug, you're a Jew. Actually, the actual side idea is to say that it's Zionism. The actual is the Holocaust.
The actual
Zionism,
power, yes.
And then, but like, yes. I like to put the hat back on.
No, absolutely. We need, you can't, like, yes, yeah. we can do that for a bit, and then we gotta, yes, we must, yeah, in the end, return to the hat. And because, yeah, there are actually, like, I mean, that's a kind, that's nice, and I think it's true as far as it goes, but then there's another way of looking at it, which is just, yeah, like, well, that's all just a very thin rhetorical veneer,
yeah,
over just the naked exercise of Zionist power.
Yes. Speaking of naked power, I want to talk about like
the sex in the movie.
but just like the broad rule of cool going on.
Mm-hmm.
The sex is obviously good stuff, right? It's
I was surprised by how tasteful it was. I mean, normally I'm like the teenage guys. I really I hate sex scenes, and I just, you know, fast forward or just avert my eyes because it always makes me cringe. Like, I don't need to see. It's like whatever. But like but in the movie, I actually thought it did. It was well, you had pretty tasteless depictions of sex scenes in the 90s.
In the 80s. There's an important line in the movie, which I think is once again sliding past Verhoeven in being like more fascister than people realize, is that Johnny Rico sees himself as this kind of like chivalry kind of guy. He's like pining after.
Oh yeah, although makes a big deal out, he hasn't slept with Denise Richards, you know, as of prom night.
And then and Razak just says like, that's not what we do. Like, you understand, we all die. Like, he's like,
yeah,
it's industrial warfare. We're not like knights in armor. We all like don't, because he says don't pass on a good thing, right? Like, actually, you should, you know,
sleep with your girlfriend, like, it's okay. You can muster in 10 minutes late.
Yeah, yeah. After that, he says like he catches them after he told them he tells them
that's right. That's right. He told
catches them and says like, we'll keep doing that for, you know.
Yeah, we got to muster in 10 minutes, but you can be there in 20.
Yeah, yeah. But like that's like, oh, actually, this is like, it's, they're not doing chivalry and shining armor and you know, Louis King of France stuff. They're doing Hitler stuff. You know, you gotta have kids. You gotta have kids. You gotta have fun now. Yeah. This is industrial warfare. We all die. You know, there's no ransoming. There's no, you know, surrender. You know, like, you know, it's true. And it's also what year was? I think it's also a direct reference to Enemy at the Gates. There's the Enemy at the Gates. It's a very similar scene.
I think that comes later, but I'd have
does
to
it?
Double check.
Does it?
I'm not
because they're almost identical in like yeah. how they're pulled off. Pulled off. Hey.
Ayo. But, Enemy at the Gates is 2001. So yeah, it's a couple years later.
I'm super. I felt like they were referencing Enemy at the Gates, but I guess yeah, this movie's older than I realized. But okay, other just rule of cool stuff is
wait, real quick on the sec. Are we gonna talk?
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Yeah.
Just because I like so. Again, I feel like Verhoeven is really critiquing the voyeurism of the camera. And that really came out in the shower scene, which dares you as a viewer to eroticize it. And of course, I remember like that, you know, Denise Richards boobies, like, which are like, you know, way better in, what was it, Wild Things? Like, if you actually want to see that. But the thing is, it's like, no, this is not a voyeuristic scene, and the tits are just played as like, yeah, we're soldiers taking a shower, why are you fixating on this, right? Which again speaks to the kind of gender equality, and as ridiculous as it was to have kind of Kung Fu princess, you know, hard ass bitches or whatever in the rifle units, you know, Hitler's Germany, you know, National Socialist Germany was also very gender egalitarian, right? It's not necessarily at the level of having women serving as ship captains or something. But when you remove physical valor out of it, perhaps there's no, you know, perhaps in a futuristic martial society, you can understand why maybe, you know, you can understand having female pilots in that kind of a way. I don't know. It was an interesting. I felt of two minds, I guess, on it. Like, in some ways, it gets portrayed. I've heard in the discourse the female soldiers thing kind of held up as an example of libtardation of a sort. And there's something to that, but I think there's also something to the counter argument about the role of women in fascist societies.
Well, I think it's just a text that like this is a good satire at all. But so all right, satirist Paul Verhoeven, what is your point here? Like that,
yeah. Right. What is that really, exactly?
What is actually? Are you saying that our society is bad and the fascist one is more egalitarian? Are you saying that it's stupid for them to have women in the infantry because they'll die and there's like a birth rate thing sub narrative going on?
That's way no. That I mean, like, that would make sense, but that he's not saying that at all.
Yeah, saying nothing. It's really just like saying nothing. At best, if I'm gonna like really steel man, if I'm like coping almost, like he's doing like he's kind of taking like late 90s equality stuff like race blind, gender blindness, and like spinning that what would that fascism look like, you know, like what if this society was taken to its to 11, like that the movie was made, maybe he's doing that, but I really don't like
I don't
it.
Think he had a clear sense of what he was doing. I think he like
yeah.
he clearly has a very he's just very good at storyboards or translating, you know, a certain kind of like the visually everything about it is great. Every aspect of the art direction and the way he does the
So speaking of that, because this is one thing I definitely knew he did, it's very Verhoeven-y. Is the gun. They call it like a Makeda or whatever, the firearm.
Mm-hmm.
The firearm just combines like cool aspects of other firearms.
Yes.
Like it's like it's also like cartoonishly long as a result.
But it looks fucking awesome. It's tactical to the extreme.
Well, like it's bullpup, it's also a pump shotgun. It's also got like a good
recoil. It just doesn't.
Yeah. But it has a good, bolt that flies back and gives a good chunk when they need it to. It has all these, like, very cool features. Some of them have, like, scopes, some don't. It's very, very, it's a very
rule
cool
of cool,
thing.
As you were saying before.
Yeah. And then also there's some, like, And of course, it's over the top and it's dumb looking. You know, that's one thing the movie also gets right. It's not rule of cool. It's like inverse rule of cool, but it actually is real. And how like doofy soldiers kind of look when they're running with helmets on. Like you do like you individual like in still shots, soldiers can look cool. In motion with all your fucking heavy kit and helmet kind of going a little too low on your eyes or too high on your forehead, like you look like a fucking dork. And you kind of got to get over it.
Well, maybe like if you like an individual.
A lot of the scenes in the background, soldiers, they go way too like far down their eyes and they can't see anything.
Yeah.
Like there's a good bit of that. Or they'll rise too high on their forehead.
When they're all like running in, you know, in unison to get on the assault craft, I'm like, fuck yeah. That was like, you feel
yeah, yeah. No, but these things are really, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also a really cool stuff. Obviously, the nuke stuff is like very funny.
I wanted to talk. I don't know how much more we want to talk about the movie. We're obviously happy to, but that's a good segue into talking about Helldivers. Helldivers obviously ticks just all of my boxes. And so when I saw the Helldivers 2 would come out and I was seeing, you know, gameplay footage and the GIFs and the memes and people kind of, you know, libtards having, again, it seemed like it was, I think that might've precipitated or it was very strange coincidence if not, that people were sort of enjoying, the accusation was that you're enjoying Helldivers unironically and therefore wrong, which very quickly became, you know, because it's so closely tied to the source material in Starship Troopers, you know, people were doing the same thing with Starship Troopers. Which is, okay, whatever. We could talk about the irony or that aspect of it. Although I don't really think there's much to say about it. I mean, you know, clearly, like, it's just, if it's not an intentional endorsement, it's an unintentional endorsement and an endorsement either way. Helldivers is fun. I actually, so while the Helldivers 2 server situation, you know, they had this massive runaway hit, completely unexpected on their hands, and so they had like server problems and people couldn't log in. I couldn't log in, so while I was waiting for you know, my spot in the queue to come up, I installed the original Helldivers, which I had gotten in like a Humble Bundle or something years ago. I'd never just played it, but I knew it was very well regarded. I just hadn't dicked around with it, and it's actually really good. And I don't know that it's necessarily, I don't think that necessarily at this point there's it's worth like covering in its own episode. But it's, real, you know, just a few key bullet points. Number one, it struck me that, Helldivers 2 is very much the game that they like, it seems that they wanted to make, but they didn't have the budget or the resources, not even just like monetary budget, like, you know, as a studio, there was no way they could pull it off. The gameplay is very, very similar. It's just like the original is top down and kind of in some ways more basic, although pretty much all of the same gameplay elements are there. They're just, you know, the sequel is big 3D third person action role play, you know, quasi role playing type environment. And yeah, it's the thing is, and because you came up in terms of the nukes. Which I like, it struck me I could see what the choice was and why they made it, and it was interesting. So, in the original Helldivers, just like in Starship Troopers, if you want to close a bug hole from which the bugs are emerging, you must use a nuclear weapon. And it's actually in the training, it's emphasized in like the tutorial, in Helldivers 1, like, I actually died. It was my only death during the tutorial was because the blast radius from the tactical nuclear weapon that you have to call down on the bug hole is actually super. It's like basically a whole screen, so you have to like clear the screen in any direction in order to avoid getting killed by your own nuclear weapon. That's what, again, the bug hole won't close otherwise. I actually tried to toss a grenade in there; it didn't do anything. In Helldivers 2. It does. It's just straight up Gears of War, and I rebound the controller keys because I kept like pushing the right button to reload, sort of mentally this was Gears of War, and so I was pushing the right button to reload and accidentally not reloading, so I rebound right button to reload and X to melee, just so I like wouldn't my brain wouldn't have this problem of keep thinking that I was playing Gears of War. But the in Helldivers 2, just like in Gears of War, you close the bug holes with a regular grenade. You do not need a tactical nuclear weapon. Which, yeah, in Starship Troopers was kind of like they basically, like visually, it's well, I guess there's also the scene where he has it. You know, I was gonna say it looked like an RPG, and it's treated largely like an RPG. It's like an RPG that launches a 500 kilogram HE or something, except it's in the size of a grenade that you can also carry in your hand and use like what was it, the thermal. What they call it in Star Wars? That
thermal detonator.
Thermal detonator. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're also just once again, rule of cool. Like, if you have a large explosive, just declare it nuclear. And it gets cooler. It's just okay, fine. You know, whatever.
I mean, in principle, there's what like a linear relationship between fissile mass and explosive power. It's just like fissile masses below a certain point have just really, really hard to make them go critical. But you know, wave your hand. Space magic, futuristic society, technological, you know, that's just a, yeah. That's an engineering problem, right?
I mean, it is. Like, you have to aim the chunks, right? Like, it's a...
Yeah. It literally is an engineering problem. It's just...
You have to aim the chunks don't impact if there's not enough chunks in the thing, but you could, if you could, in theory, aim the chunks from the initial... It's like, right, initial contact is easy. It's the secondary contacts.
Yeah, it's something
that's it's been a while since I I've stopped downloading schematics for nuclear weapons after getting into being a neo-Nazi because, right. Obviously.
Exactly. Yeah.
I have some old books, though. The interesting...
Yes, it's very much really cool. And it totally works. I mean, you know, visually and as a story device, it totally works. It's just something to point out. Yeah, I don't know that I have much more on... Helldivers, other than...
Oh, I have a really weird... You want some just weird movie lore background stuff?
Absolutely.
So due to the... So the movie was in 97. Due to the assault weapons ban, there were not a lot of, like, AR-15s around, which is why you see weird guns from this era in movies. Assault weapons ban ends in 96, pretty much, and production starts again. So all of the guns, they're actually mini-14s. with a big plastic shell over them, so you wouldn't think the Mini 14 is like a cool tactical gun. It's like the opposite of tactical gun, right? It's the guts.
Yeah, it's right. It's yeah.
It's a ranch gun, right? Know, for farmers or whatever, like a farmer's light rifle.
But even though that's like purely aesthetic, just about. I mean, like function.
Yeah. And you only really can see when you see the very few scenes where they focus on the bolt going backwards and a round coming out that hits a Mini 14. It's almost impossible to tell. But there may actually mini 14s.
I had no idea. I mean,
they would have been ARs or AKs, but the assault weapons ban had driven up the price of those, and then hadn't come back down yet until, you know, the 2000s.
I think it expired in 90. I have to double check. But yeah.
So the A team also famously used mini 14s. They were also cheaper back then too. Obviously, mini 14s,
especially and AKs too. I mean, Soviet, you know, or surplus at the end of the Cold War, it was dirt cheap.
Yep. There's also rule of cool, like just very dumb, like a lot of references to, like just dumb World War II movies. Like you'll see people throw grenades, but like they'll pick the pin out with their teeth. Like long after that trope was gone, like long after that trope would have been ruined by the internet. People explain that doesn't work that way. There's just, like a couple like grenade teeth scenes that are good. I we're wrapping up. I could go into more like granular stuff, but it's just me being a fan of the book and talking about the book. The viewer can just read Starship Troopers. It's
sure, yeah.
It's like $2 used on Amazon, dude. It's
free on LibGen.
just read it. Some people bounce off of it. Most people don't. It's great. I think if you're here, you can probably handle it. Very few. That's why I think also Verhoeven was being kind of worked against by the whole crew of this film, because people generally try to read the book on a crew or actor or doing anything. Most people enjoy the book. There's like, it's a weird, like some people just get filtered by the classroom stuff at the beginning, and some people get filtered by like the fascism. But that's there. I would say it's a minority of most people would actually really love the book.
I think most normies would be reading it like, oh, it's just, this is a cool book about fighting space aliens, you know? Like, it's not... Yeah.
Also, the book used to be on a lot of required reading lists for the U.S. military and is gone. Pulled, been stolen. I didn't know that. That's... Oh, yeah, it was... well, no, I mean...
The US military, right, again, it makes the U.S. military worse, therefore it's a good thing.
Yeah, also, like, it's directly contrary to the mission of the U.S. military, which is like...
Of course.
You know, like, only people who are in the military should vote. It's like, well, why are you reading this? You don't fight for that society. You fight for a fake, really, really gay society where literally anybody can vote. Like, so... And what you gonna do? Like people with American citizenship who have never been to America, who, if your parents are American citizens and you live in a foreign country, you can still vote in America. Like, that's not a... You could never have been to America and still vote. Like, it's like the opposite society, you know?
Yep.
Or you could, like, just have come over and filled the paperwork out and then you could vote. It's really gay. Read the book. You can watch the movie too. It's worth watching.
Definitely watch the movie. It's excellent, and I think it's that was maybe the last thing in terms, because I mentioned the art, and I do think just the art direction is insane. But limitation of the era was the very, very basic CGI. The arachnids are pretty well animated, but other than that, it's like
what resolution did you watch this in?
I watched it at 4K.
That's the problem. The CGI is actually excellent.
Okay.
Anything, I watched it in, I think, 1080p, and it was great. 1080p is the peak. Okay, you get it's way ahead of its time.
I'm sure you're, first of all. What I was going to say was the elements are all there, like the basic layout of like the ship, the exteriors and things, like the big picture geometry is excellent and it's all on point. It's the little details that you would expect in contemporary productions that are missing. That is textbook case for AI. And it's the kind of thing that's also simple enough that I think, if someone out there wants to try, I also might give it a try myself, because it seems like a very easy, quote unquote, fix. Like, you can make it look like a recent release movie, because the bones are great as far as the visuals of the CGI. It's literally just the kind of little embellishments. If the textures are really flat, then it kind of looks a little bit off, especially in higher resolutions. But it's a very easy fix for something for like AI type stuff. Compared to, I had my other idea for AI was my app Denegrify, to, for example, fix Liet Kynes in the new Dunk. And Dune, sorry, maybe this is a little too esoteric. Yeah, you know, famously Liet Kynes is completely wrong in Dunk. Denegrify app could fix that theoretically.
Yo, you think you could make Zendaya attractive?
Much easier. That's easier.
Is it? I don't know.
No, you just completely change your. You just put Denise Richards in Denise Richards' face on those frames. Done. The Liet Kynes fix, I think, would be a little harder because she has those nappy dreadlocks. Like that's going to be a definitely.
Looking back on Dune, like, if
Dune
you
or
made,
Dunk?
Like, either one, Dunk.
No, I mean, David Lynch or the... or the.
Yeah, if you made Liet Kynes, like, black, it would make a certain amount of sense in the narrative. Being a woman is, like,
yeah,
very much
retarded.
Over the line. Because he's a foreigner to that land, right? Like, Liet Kynes being a foreigner
if
to the land.
If it was Idris Elba, not to do the thing.
And also, like,
but
kind
like,
of a lazy...
I honestly wouldn't mind as much if it was Idris Elba.
I like a reading of Liet Kynes where he's kind of like a DMV guy. Like, he's just like shamming from work. You know, I got this government job. No one checks in with me. I just kind of collect a check and hang out with the local guys. And we do like drugs. Like,
right.
You
drugs with the local.
Yeah. You just kind of, I work for the, His Most High Emperor and no one checks in on me. So I kind of just,
do whatever.
Got a remote job from Arrakis, being a whammon takes over the edge, though.
No, like, it's just wrong. It's just dumb. Like, at that point, it's like, what the fuck? Yeah, no, that was so, so Denegrify is something that I would like to develop, but fixing the sort of base, like the just the little details, it literally just needs like the more convincingly detailed facades, and that's just the easiest possible thing to fix.
Although I also just brought for the listener, I'm glad you have kind of broken your seal on watching movies that I've requested. I really want you to watch Scarface. I want to do Scarface so badly.
Yeah, we've been wanting to do that for years.
It's so similar in that every scene is
great. Like, it's so watchable. There's no, there's not an unwatchable scene or even like a boring scene. They're all like grab you. As a over narrative, it's okay. It's fine. It's not like wonderful stuff. I really want to do Scarface. We have a listener who I really want to do Scarface for. He knows who he is. But cool. It's a very similar. It's similar in ways that I kind of want to talk about. We're just talking how it's shot.
And I also I want to do RoboCop. We could do RoboCop old and new, as well on for.
Do we have to watch? I mean, new RoboCop's kind of. Have you seen it?
I have not.
I don't worry. It's like not whatever. Missable. It's like it's very forgettable.
The third one that I, like on this following the same kind of theme is. I've seen the original Judge Dredd many times, but I have not. I heard the reboot was great.
Oh, I'm the opposite. I've never seen the old one because it looked cringe.
Oh,
the
really? New one's fucking no, it's awesome. Good. Yeah, so okay. we got to do that for those will be I guess I G and G letter medias.
Yeah.
In the future,
but I want to do Scarface next.
Yes,
I want to. You'll. Scarface is great, and it has like enough politics to talk about for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Bet. Yeah. Okay, cool.
All right.
We'll definitely do that. Yes. In the meantime, you can reach us at niggertalk, NIGRTALK, at proton.me.
And remember, Antelope Hill for all your booking needs. Books. Yes. They're great. Antelope Hill. New writing contest. Check it out.
I didn't know. What's the writing contest? Like, what's the theme?
Check it out on your own time. I do not want to. I don't know when this is coming out versus when that's coming out. I don't want to spoil it.
Okay,
all
right.
Might be it to market. It's very interesting. It's very good. Check the Antelope Hill Twitter account or Telegram. It's more thematic. It's much more dialed in. I think than previous. Previous has been pretty open. Like, kind of do what you want. This one, I think, if you want to, if you kind of write better within like a couple limitations or some more guardrails, I think you'll really like it. Mostly that's like me. How I am. I think you'll be able to contribute.
Structure, like having constraints as a writer, is definitely beneficial. Like when there's nothing, you know, harder to deal with than totally blank page. Yeah. On which note, I don't know. So I set up a. We have now a National Institute for Gamer Review Substack. That's Nigger Podcast, NIGR Podcast.substack.com. So far, it's just like a relay for the RSS. People have reported maybe better success directly downloading episodes from there. I don't know. I'm going to see about, we may change the RSS to, I don't know. I have to see how it's going to work and Substack. And because I also, it's good for audio. It's also obviously, a great place for like written pieces or stuff. So I don't know if we're going to do that or not, but, either way, yes, please, check out or, you know, be aware that you can. And check us out on Substack as well. So yeah, with that, was there anything else? I think that's pretty much it.
No, that's
for
legit.
Now. Yeah, cool. All right. So yes, we will be back soon. In the meantime, hope you enjoy listening and take care.
Oh wait, I have one final joke. Neil Patrick Harris in the movie is a brain bug chaser.
Yes. Yes he is. All right. Take care everyone.
Dumb. Girls are dumb. They're so dumb.